From Connellsville to Jeffersonville, Katanning to Pittston, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Tom Wolf is proposing to cut state funding to charter schools at precisely the time more Pennsylvania families are choosing that option for their children. David Taylor is joined by Rebecca Euler and Matt Briette for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And Texas and Mississippi joined the growing list of states to drop ineffective and harmful restrictions on businesses during the COVID-19 pandemic. It's time for Pennsylvania to do the same. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf took the first steps toward ending state-imposed restrictions related to COVID-19. The requirement for Pennsylvanians who travel to other states to have either a negative test or quarantine for 10 days upon returning has been lifted. The governor also slightly increased indoor gathering restrictions from 10 to 15% of capacity, and also raised outdoor gathering restrictions. As a result, fans are returning to sporting events with both the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Philadelphia Flyers, allowing fans in attendance for the first time in over a year. Wolf indicated a further loosening of restrictions will take place as the virus subsides. In a related development, Pennsylvania House Republicans announced they will begin an investigation into the Wolf administration's handling of nursing homes and other long-term care facilities during the COVID-19 outbreak. More than 12,000 seniors have died in such facilities after Wolf and former State Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine instituted a policy of sending patients still suffering from the disease back into those facilities. State Representative Natalie Mihalik, who represents parts of Allegheny and Washington counties, said Wolf's lack of transparency makes the legislative investigation necessary. Pennsylvanians will be electing a new governor next year, as Governor Tom Wolf is term limited and cannot seek re-election. Two national rating organizations have labeled the race a toss-up. Inside Elections and the Cook Political Report have both rated the race as a toss-up. For decades, the Pennsylvania governorship swung between the two parties every 8 years. That until Wolf defeated incumbent Governor Tom Corbett in 2014. Candidates for that seat and for the open seat of retiring U.S. Senator Pat Toomey are beginning to float trial balloons, making Pennsylvania once again a battleground state. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The number of students enrolling in charter schools increased dramatically over the past year as parents sought new options during the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, with those schools more popular than ever, Governor Tom Wolf is proposing to slash state spending on such schools. Our Capitol Watch crew is here to talk about it. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs, and by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. In the studio with me, your Capitol Watch All-Stars, Matt Briette, President and CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs.
Good to be with you, David.
Thanks so much. And the newly minted president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, Rebecca Euler. Thanks for being on the show.
Happy to be back again. Thanks, Dave.
So, again, the wheel keeps turning and all kinds of intrigue in Harrisburg. And, Matt, is there any end to the foolishness that Governor Tom Wolf comes up with?
Well, when you think things have settled down, something else pops up, right? I mean, I guess that's the shenanigans, the tomfoolery. tomfoolery. What other words can we come up with?
I think we must officially designate it as tomfoolery. Could you tell us about the latest chapter in the tomfoolery?
Well, as Governor Wolf has just been an example of failed leadership on things, whether it's those trying to earn a living in small business being shut down, to unemployment checks not being processed, sending out wrong ones, to not being able to visit loved ones and their nursing homes, to kids not going to school, to fumbling a constitutional amendment to provide for victims of sex. We'll get back to that later. I mean, those are all the things that Governor Wolf has failed on. And to top it off, he's now trying to take away money from schools that are actually teaching children. You might remember he had this, what were all of his three sayings? You know, government that works, schools that teach, and jobs that pay. Well, the whole schools that teach, well, we kind of jettisoned that for 12 months. You've got, 40% of school buildings are empty. Mm-hmm. Schools haven't lost a single penny. They've gotten actually $3 billion more in stimulus money or emergency funding. They're sitting on $4.5 billion in reserve funds. They've lost 50,000 kids to the charter schools in particular, and private schools.
Right. And those are schools that the parents chose.
Correct. Yes. Correct. That they are fleeing to.
Yes. Yes.
And what is Tom Wolf's response? Let's punish them. Let's take money away from the kids so that they can't attend the schools that are actually teaching, rather than Tom Wolf's government schools that are shuttered and failing.
Is it the majority of kids that benefit from these charter schools are disadvantaged? In many ways, anyway.
Yeah, we are talking about black and brown and low-income families, because that's where charter schools have popped up the most, is in areas that the traditional public schools are not serving those kids. And so these are the very, you're absolutely spot on, Rebecca. He wants to harm the kids who need these choices the most.
We all who are involved in the public policy process know why the governor would do this. But for the benefit of our listeners, Matt, would you explain why the governor would wage this vengeful campaign against schools that help poor and minority kids?
Well, first of all, to my knowledge, Tom Wolf has never set foot in a public charter school. So one, he's not experienced what goes on in these charter schools that are alternative public schools for kids. We know that the PSEA, the Pennsylvania State Education Association, the PFT, the Pennsylvania Federation of Teachers, which have a monopoly over teacher union representation in the state, have been the largest contributors to Tom Wolf. Now, am I saying that he is bought by them? No, he sold out to them a long, long time ago. They're just supporting their guy who wants to shut down alternatives to the public, union-dominated system. So it's really no surprise that he's doing this, but, the brazenness, the willful ignorance about what is actually happening in these schools that are teaching, that are open, that are serving kids, it's really actually very, very sad.
So if charter schools have seen an increase, and I know the demand is higher than the supply for charter school seats, wouldn't that indicate to someone who's looking at this from an objective standpoint that maybe something needs to change about public schools in order to attract kids to public schools instead of going to charter schools? Because, I mean, this past year has been obviously unprecedented, but I think a lot of parents have realized that their kids just simply don't learn in the public schools and haven't been able to this past year. You would think that would inspire the public school system to take a hard look at the way they're teaching or not teaching in the case of this past year.
One would hope, but here's the exact opposite is happening. The PSBA, Pennsylvania School Boards Association, in league with the teacher union, instead of saying, you know what, maybe we need to look at ourselves and say, what are we not doing well enough that is causing 50,000 kids to go choose alternative schools? Instead, what they're doing is that they are now going to war against charter schools. So this is being primed and pumped by those very special interests. And they're saying that charter schools are creating a financial crisis in the public schools.
And that is that is such total bunk. That is complete and total nonsense.
Thanks for minding your manners.
Every kid that leaves the public schools for a public charter school, that the public school that student left retains a big chunk of the money. Is it
25%?
A percent of the money for a kid they no longer have
to
teach.
That's right.
For an empty chair, they still get a chunk of the money that was supposed to go to the education of that student. It's something else with waging war, the governor waging war on the virtual charter schools, that these are the schools that have remained open throughout and that families are moving to the virtual schools because the local public schools, having to go online, are blundering. They don't know how to do it right. And so the
families wouldn't even take the counsel from cyber schools that were offering it.
Like,
let us help you. And they said, no, thanks.
Correct. And for years and years, Matt, and I serve on the school board of one of Pennsylvania's statewide virtual charter schools, and that we've heard from the conventional, you know, physical zip code based public school districts that online learning is easy and inexpensive, and that's why
they need to cut their funding.
That's why they cut their funding. Yeah. Well, now that the public schools have to engage with trying to help kids to learn online,
they want their funding cut, right?
surprise, plot twist. They go, this is really hard, and that we have all these challenges with connectivity and technology and deliverable online curriculum and stuff. We need more money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's ludicrous because you're exactly right, because they have been claiming all along that virtual charter schools need less money because they don't need this. But then when they are having to go virtual, they're saying they need more money.
Correct.
And they've been getting it.
Correct.
They've been getting it, yet it's still not enough. And hence the war on charters by Tom Wolf and all of the special interests in the government school education industrial complex are attacking these little guys. I mean, it's basically Goliath, you know, saying, well, David's just stealing all of our money. And it's just not true. As you said, David, they're taking a fraction of the resources allocated for that child, and they're keeping all the money for a kid they no longer have to educate. In fact, you could say, you know what, you could have an empty traditional public school district building, and they would still be getting funding of 20-25% with zero kids.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. Also with me, Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association.
So I think just thinking over this past year, and you talk there in the end there about parental choice, and this is exactly, parents are choosing these schools. So I think a lot of parents have felt frustrated with public schools over the past year, not being responsive to their concerns about their children's education. But correct me if I'm wrong, but charter schools are directly responsible to the parents. If they don't show show that they can educate the child, then that parent can leave the school.
That's right.
And the money follows the kid.
And the money follows the kid. So in this case, it's just it's something that just is really galling, because you have a parental choice in the matter, and there's accountability for that parental choice too.
Well, another sad part, and I think it's important for us to recognize that there are a lot of teachers in the traditional public school system that want to be in the classroom, that want to be with their kids. I mean, 100% of the teachers that I know want that. But it's the unions that keep putting up roadblocks that are stymieing efforts to get kids back in schools. And they move the goalposts for what they want. We want 100% vaccination of not only all the teachers, but all the kids before we feel safe to set foot in the classroom. So you've got a lot of teachers that, unfortunately, their union is not representing their interests as teachers, let alone the kids who are suffering from this.
Well, and this is really galling, because, you know, Tom Wolf is now pandering to that constituency and is moving the public school employees up the list for vaccinations above and before our senior citizens, who are most vulnerable, and other people who are vulnerable because of their medical conditions. And it's like, this is just insane. Yeah. It has not been shown that schools are in any way a high transmissibility situation. If anything, that the schools, because kids don't get it or don't pass it, that the schools are safer. It's like, this is mindless pandering to, and that further endangers our seniors who already are suffering from a botched vaccination rollout, and that people are undertaking heroic efforts to help their beloved senior citizen family member to get inoculated.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there are lots of 30-something teachers saying, why would you give it to me when we know we've got 80-year-olds, 90-year-olds
correct,
that are still not getting access to vaccines?
Correct.
Yet this is what, look, he is pandering to his number one special interest, and it's very unfortunate.
So, Matt, what are the prospects that that Governor Wolf is going to get some or all of this vendetta against charter schools?
So this is where, David, I wish I could say it's DOA, like I believe his tax increase proposal. I believe that is DOA. But here's where the caveats are. You've got a lot of areas where you've got Republicans sitting on school boards that are being filled with this gibberish that charter schools are somehow causing a financial crisis in their school district. And I think in some ways it's ways that people can be deflect from addressing the real problems in the schools, that their collective bargaining agreements that are far too generous, certainly relative to what else is going on in the community. And so you tend to have even some Republicans that are saying, yeah, these charter schools are a problem. They're taking money away from my local school district. And when you've got, 80, 90, 95% of the kids actually in the traditional public school,
in those areas, well,
it seems to resonate with even people who should know better. So the likelihood of this being defeated, like I believe Tom Wolf's tax increase, I don't think it's at the same level. I think we've got some education to do ourselves and making sure that people understand the charter schools, one, are public schools.
They are.
Two, they're funded at less than the traditional public school model. And three, they only exist because parents are saying, my assigned school district is not satisfactory. I need to do something for my child's best interest. And they're making these kinds of choices. So those are the things that need to be educated on.
I wonder if we can back up for a second just to education funding altogether, because I know Wolf sort of couches this in his increasing, public education spending and school funding. But I know that Pennsylvania spends one of the highest per capita per child in the United States. So, and I know also that education spending has been increasing continuously, and it's at an all-time state funding high in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
No,
but
you're absolutely
that all
right. Top 10. We're top 10 in the country on a per student basis. We spend, I think it's about $3,000 more than the national average per child. And in some of our urban areas, I mean, right where, we're sitting next to the city of Harrisburg, we're closing in on $20,000 per kid. And unfortunately, it's not giving an education. I mean, people would be willing to pay, big dollars for a good education.
Right.
That's not happening in these areas.
Yes.
I think there's this misinformation out there that schools are underfunded and that they're continually underfunded by the state, and that's just not the case. So, I just know he's trying to justify this as a part of that.
Well, and unfortunately, there could be a Supreme Court ruling from our Pennsylvania State Supreme Court looking at funding, and in fact, what the lawsuit, I believe, that is before them is claiming that we underfund our schools by $3 billion. So you want to talk about
per year.
Yeah, that's per year. So the courts could very well be coming down and saying, go find that money, legislature, because you must spend $3 billion more on top of what we're already spending. Again, top 10 in the country today. Far exceeding the national average.
Well, and the heart of the problem is that it's not the spend, it's the value you get for the money that is spent. And we have some high spending school districts that are very good and some high spending ones that are really not good. And conversely, the same. We have more economical school districts that perform well, and we have other districts with a low spend that don't perform well. Like, there's no direct correlation. Yeah. It's a mental mistake of the first order that somehow more spending equals better results. Yeah. It's just not true.
A lot of people think, oh, if we just put more money in it, that, you know, that will solve the problems. But that has not been the case. In fact, there was a court ruling in Kansas City, Missouri. This is probably 30 years ago.
Yes.
That basically said blank slate in spending. Spend without regard to how much things cost. Do whatever you need to lift education levels. They did everything they could. What happened to test scores? Nothing. I mean, it didn't. They spent without any limits, and it didn't change anything in itself.
Didn't move the needle because it had nothing to do
because
with
more dollars
learning.
Do not give you more scholars.
Well, that gets back to the accountability I mentioned when you said there's such a disparity between school districts and spending and what's produced by the school districts, with the education of the actual children involved. And that gets to the accountability and how, you know, maybe when the governor wants to talk about accountability for charter schools, he should look to the public schools as well.
And you're exactly right about that. And a way to do that would be to make the public schools as accountable as the charter schools,
right.
Which is that the money follows the kid. And if you can't earn the respect and acceptance of that kid's parents or guardians, they can take the kid, and the money goes with the kid.
Well, fortunately, there's another push for this and a priority in the House and the Senate. In fact, Senate Bill 1.
Push for which?
For funding the student rather than the system.
Wow.
Because that's exactly what we have to fund, the child rather than school buildings. Because right now, we fund a system, not students. And Senate Bill 1, which will be coming out very shortly, is saying we need to do exactly that. Let's put the money in the kid's backpack, and they take that to the school that will best serve their needs. It's time that we reverse this discussion about let's fund kids.
Yeah, and that's how we get where we need to go, which is giving each and every one of our young people the kind of formational experience that's going to help them to be successful in life. Well, anyway, Matt, thanks so much for guiding us through all of this. This is all the time we have. Where can the listeners go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you're doing?
Yes, go to thecommonwealthpartners.com or at Facebook, Commonwealth Partners.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about you and your group?
They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at pmta.org.
Wonderful. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30. From Matt and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. During the early months of the COVID-19 pandemic, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and California Governor Gavin Newsom were hailed as heroes of the fight to contain the virus through draconian shutdown measures, while Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was heavily criticized for respecting individual liberty. A year later, the narrative has changed dramatically. Cuomo is mired in a growing sexual harassment scandal and is being investigated for hiding the true number of seniors who died in Empire State nursing homes as a result of his failed COVID-19 policies. In California, Newsom is all but certain to face a recall election as people rebel against his harsh policies. Meanwhile, DeSantis' political star is on the rise. He finished far ahead of the pack in a CPAC poll of potential 2024 presidential candidates when former President Donald Trump was not included in the question, second only to Trump when he was included. Florida, despite the lack of state restrictions, has fared at least as well, in fact, much better than New York, California, and other restrictive states, including Pennsylvania. As a result, the Florida economy is booming, while others continue to wallow in the pandemic-induced recession. Governor Tom Wolf has largely avoided the national spotlight, despite also being complicit in enforcing policies that resulted in massive deaths in state nursing homes. His administration has also botched handling of every phase of the pandemic, from being unable to provide accurate statistics to the lagging processing of unemployment compensation claims to their inability to keep up with the rest of the nation in deploying the vaccine. Throughout all of the Wolf administration's ineptitude, incompetence, and general ineffectiveness, the governor has clung to his emergency powers like a banana republic dictator. Recently, he again renewed his emergency declaration for a fourth time, despite a dramatic drop in cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. A state legislature, fed up with Wolf's refusal to engage in any meaningful dialogue on pandemic-related issues, has placed on the May primary ballot a proposed constitutional amendment that would provide some measure of checks and balances. Wolf has inexplicably denounced the referendum, in which voters will have the final say, as, quote, anti-democratic. He is deploying every trick in the book to prevent the constitutional amendment from being approved, going so far as to craft slanted, highly misleading language to place on the ballot in an effort to confuse voters. All this while the draconian restrictions placed on the residents of Penns Woods continue in effect. The hospitality industry has been especially hard hit, as indoor dining limits and a ban on gathering at bars remains in effect. In a PR move, the governor proposes to offer financial aid to such businesses, but the money involved amounts to mere crumbs compared to the economic pain he has inflicted. As a state and nation, we have all along been confronted with the need to deal with the virus and at the same time cope with the economic pain it has caused. As the Florida experience has demonstrated, it is clear shutdowns and restrictions have had minimal to no effect on the virus. At the same time, the economic pain they have caused has been great. Add in backsliding in the fight against opioid abuse, increasing suicide rates, a lost year of educational opportunities, record unemployment, and mounting business closures, and there no longer is any doubt but that the cure prescribed by Wolf and his fellow travelers has become worse than the disease. Dr. Martin McCary, a professor at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, recently wrote in the Wall Street Journal that because infections have been more widespread than the data suggests, spread of the virus has slowed. He cited that as a reason for declining case numbers and his conclusion that COVID-19 will be, quote, mostly gone by mid-April. Those declining case numbers, coupled with more and more Pennsylvanians receiving the vaccine, have made the continued imposition of draconian, state-ordered restrictions unnecessary. At this point in the pandemic, the Centers for Disease Control has published enough guidelines for every aspect of society, from schools to restaurants to individual families, to know what steps must be taken to protect themselves and others. It's time for Governor Wolf to end the emergency declaration and the state-imposed restrictions that clearly were not necessary to get us to this point and certainly are not needed going forward. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WBFD-AM in Bedford, WGPA-AM in Bethlehem, along with WHLM AM and FM in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
We'll be right back.